The Duncan disobeys me.
They were in the airy room of golden stone atop the Citadel's south tower, Leto's third full day back from the decennial festival in On. An open portal beside him looked out over the harsh noonday of the Sarir. The wind made a deep humming sound through the opening. It stirred up dust and sand, which made Moneo squint. Leto seemed not to notice the irritation. He stared out across the Sarir, where the air was alive with heat movements. The distant flow of dunes suggested a mobility in the landscape which only his eyes observed. Moneo stood immersed in the sour odours of his own fear, knowing that the wind conveyed the message of these odours to Leto's senses. The arrangements for the wedding, the upset among the fish speakers, everything was paradox. It reminded Moneo of something the God Emperor had said in the first days of their association. Paradox is a pointer telling you to look beyond it. If paradoxes bother you, that betrays your deep desire for absolutes. The relativist treats a paradox merely as interesting, perhaps amusing, or even, dreadful thought, educational.
You do not respond, Leto said.
He turned from his examination of the Sarir and focused the weight of his attention on Moneo. Moneo could only shrug.
How near is the worm?
He wondered. Moneo had noticed that the return to the Citadel from On sometimes aroused the worm. No sign of that awful shift in the God Emperor's presence had yet betrayed itself, but Moneo sensed it. Could the worm come without warning?
Accelerate arrangements for the wedding, Leto said. Make it as soon as possible.
Before you test Siona?
Leto was silent for a moment, then,
No. What will you do about the Duncan?
What would you have me do, Lord?
I told him not to see Nori, to avoid her. I told him it was an order.
She has sympathy for him, Lord. Nothing more.
Why would she have sympathy for him?
He is a Gola. He has no connection to our times. No roots.
He has roots as deep as mine.
But he does not know this, Lord.
Are you arguing with me, Moneo?
Moneo backed away a half step, knowing that this did not remove him from danger.
Oh, no, Lord. But I always try to tell you, truly, what I believe is happening.
I will tell you what is happening. He is courting her.
But she initiates their meetings, Lord.
Then you knew about this.
I did not know you had absolutely prohibited it, Lord.
Leto spoke in a musing voice.
He is clever with women, Moneo. Exceedingly clever. He sees into their souls and makes them do what he wants. It has always been that way with the Duncans.
I did not know you had prohibited all meetings between them, Lord.
Moneo's voice was almost strident.
He is more dangerous than any of the others, Leto said. It is the fault of our times.
Lord, the Tleilaxu do not have a successor for him ready to deliver.
And we need this one?
You said it yourself, Lord. It is a paradox which I do not understand, but you did say it.
How long until there could be a replacement?
At least a year, Lord. Shall I inquire as to a specific date?
Do it today.
He may hear about it, Lord. The previous one did.
I do not want it to happen this way, Moneo.
I know, Lord.
And I dare not speak of this to Nori, Leto said. The Duncan is not for her. Yet I cannot hurt her.
This last was almost a wail. Moneo stood in awed silence.
Can't you see this? Leto demanded. Moneo, help me!
I see that it is different with Nori,
Moneo said.
But I do not know what to do.
What is different?
Leto's voice had a penetrating quality which cut right through Moneo.
I mean your attitude toward her, Lord. It is different from anything I have ever seen in you.
Moneo noted then the first signs, twitching in the God Emperor's hands, the beginning glaze in the eyes.
Gods, the worm is coming.
Moneo felt totally exposed. A simple flick of the great body would crush Moneo against a wall.
I must appeal to the human in him. Lord, Moneo said, I have read the accounts and heard your own words about your marriage to your sister Ganima.
If only she were with me now, Leto said.
She was never your mate, Lord.
What are you suggesting?
Leto demanded. The twitching of Leto's hands had become a spasmodic vibration.
She was... I mean, Lord, that Ganima was Harkaladar's mate.
Of course she was. All of you Atreides are descended from them.
Is there something you have not told me, Lord? Is it possible, that is, with Hui Nori, could you mate?
Leto's hands shook so strongly, Monea wondered that their owner did not know it. The glazing of the great blue eyes deepened. Monea backed another step toward the door to the stairs leading down from this deadly place.
Do not question me about possibilities, Leto said,
and his voice was hideously distant, gone somewhere into the layers of his past.
Never again, Lord,
Moneo said. He bowed himself back to only a single pace from the door.
I will speak to Nori, Lord, and to the Duncan.
Do what you can.
Leto's voice was far away in those interior chambers which only he could enter. Softly, Moneo let himself out of the door. He closed it behind him and placed his back against it, trembling.
Ah, that was the closest ever.
And the paradox remained. Where did it point? What was the meaning of the God Emperor's odd and painful decisions? What had brought the worm who is God? A thumping sound from within Leto's eyrie, a heavy beating against stone. Moneo dared not open the door to investigate. He pushed himself away from the surface which reflected that dreadful thumping and went down the stairs, moving cautiously, not drawing an easy breath until he reached ground level and the fish speaker guard there.
Is he disturbed?
She asked, looking up the stairs. Moneo nodded. They both could hear the thumping quite plainly.
What disturbs him?
The guard asked.
He is God, and we are mortal,
Moneo said. This was an answer which usually satisfied fish speakers, but new forces were at work now. She looked directly at him, and Moneo saw the killer training close to the surface of her soft features. She was a relatively young woman with auburn hair and a face usually dominated by a turned-up nose and full lips, but now her eyes were hard and demanding. Only a fool would turn his back on those eyes.
I did not disturb him, Moneo said.
Of course not,
she agreed. Her look softened slightly. But I would like to know who or what did.
I think he is impatient for his marriage,
Moneo said.
I think that's all it is.
Then hurry the day, she said.
That's what I'm about,
Moneo said. He turned and hurried away down the long hall to his own area of the citadel.
Gods,
the fish speakers were becoming as dangerous as the God Emperor.
That stupid Duncan, he put us all in peril. And Hui Nori, what's to be done about her?
The pattern of monarchies and similar systems has a message of value for all political forms. My memories assure me that governments of any kind could profit from this message. Governments can be useful to the governed only so long as inherent tendencies toward tyranny are restrained. Monarchies have some good features beyond their star qualities. They can reduce the size and parasitic nature of the management bureaucracy. They can make speedy decisions when necessary. They fit an ancient human demand for a parental, tribal, feudal hierarchy where every person knows his place. It is valuable to know your place, even if that place is temporary. It is galling to be held in place against your will. This is why I teach about tyranny in the best possible way. By example, even though you read these words after a passage of eons, my tyranny will not be forgotten. My golden path assures this. Knowing my message, I expect you to be exceedingly careful about the powers you delegate to any government. The Stolen Journals.
Leto prepared with patient care for his first private meeting with Siona since her childhood banishment to the fish speaker schools in the festival city. He told Moneo that he would see her at the little citadel, a vantage tower he had built in the central Sarir. The site had been chosen to provide views of old and new, and places between. There were no roads to the little citadel. Visitors arrived by thopter. Later went there as though by magic. With his own hands, in the early days of his ascendancy, Leto had used an Ixion machine to dig a secret tunnel under the Sarir to his tower, doing all the work himself. In those days a few wild sandworms still roamed the desert. He had lined his tunnel with massive walls of fused silica, and had embedded countless bubbles of worm-repelling water in the outer layers. The tunnel anticipated his maximum growth and the requirements of a royal cart, which, at that time, had been only a figment of his visions. In the early pre-dawn hours of the day assigned to Siona, Leto descended to the crypt and gave orders to his guard that he was not to be disturbed by anyone. His cart sped him down one of the crypt's dark spokes, where he opened a hidden portal, emerging in less than an hour at the little citadel. One of his delights was to go out alone onto the sand. No cart, only his pre-worm body to carry him. The sand felt luxuriously sensuous against him. The heat of his passage through the dunes in the day's first light sent up a wake of steam which required him to keep moving. He brought himself to a stop only when he found a relatively dry pocket about 5 kilometers out. He lay there at the center of an uncomfortable dampness from the trace dew, his body just outside the long shadow of the tower which stretched eastward from him across the dunes. From a distance, the 3,000 meters of the tower could be seen as an impossible needle stabbing the sky. Only the inspired blend of Leto's commands and Ixion imagination made the structure conceivable. 150 meters in diameter, the tower sat on a foundation which plunged as deeply under the sand as it climbed above. The magic of plasteel and superlight alloys kept it supple in the wind and resistant to sandblast abrasions. Leto enjoyed the place so much that he rationed his visits, making up a long list of personal rules which had to be met. The rules added up to great necessity. For a few moments, while he lay there, he could shed the loads of the golden path. Moneo, good and reliable Moneo, would see that Siona arrived promptly just at nightfall. Leto had a full day in which to relax and think, to play and pretend that he possessed no cares, to drink up the raw sustenance of the earth in a feeding frenzy which he could never indulge in at On or at the Citadel. In those places he was required to confine himself to furtive burrowings through narrow passages where only prescient caution kept him from encountering water pockets. Here, though, he could race through the sand and across it, feed and grow strong. Sand crunched beneath him as he rolled, flexing his body in pure animal enjoyment. He could feel his worm self being restored, an electric sensation which sent messages of health all through him. The sun was well above the horizon now, painting a golden line up the side of the tower. There was the smell of bitter dust in the air, and an odor of distant, spiny plants which had responded to the morning's trace dew. Gently at first, then more rapidly, he moved out in a wide circle around the tower, thinking about Siona as he went. There could be no more delays. She had to be tested. Moneo knew this as well as Leto did. Just that morning, Moneo had said, "Lord, there is terrible violence in her." "She has the beginnings of adrenaline addiction," Leto had said. "It's cold turkey time."
"Cold what, Lord?"
"It's an ancient expression. It means she must be subjected to a complete withdrawal. She must go through a necessity shock."
"Oh, I see."
For once, Leto realized, Moneo did see. Moneo had gone through his own cold turkey time. "The young generally are incapable of making hard decisions, unless those decisions are associated with immediate violence and the consequent sharp flow of adrenaline," Leto had explained. Moneo had held himself in reflective silence, remembering. Then,
"It is a great peril."
"That's the violence you see in Siona. Even old people can cling to it, but the young wallow in it." As he circled his tower in the growing light of the day, enjoying the feel of the sand even more as it dried, Leto thought about the conversation. He slowed his passage over the sand. A wind from behind him carried the vented oxygen and a burnt flint smell over his human nostrils. He inhaled deeply, lifting his magnified awareness to a new level. This preliminary day contained a multiple purpose. He thought of the coming encounter much as an ancient bullfighter had thought about the first examination of a horned adversary. Siona possessed her own version of horns, although Moneo would make certain that she brought no physical weapons to this encounter. Leto had to be sure, though, that he knew Siona's every strength and every weakness, and he would have to create special susceptibilities in her wherever possible. She had to be prepared for the test, her psychic muscles blunted by well-planted barbs. Shortly after noon, his worm self satiated, Leto returned to the tower, crawled back onto his cart and lifted on suspensers to the very tip of a portal there which opened only at his command. Throughout the rest of the day, he lay there in the eyrie, thinking, plotting. The fluttering wings of an ornithopter whispered on the air just at nightfall to signal Moneo's arrival. Faithful Moneo. Leto caused a landing lip to extrude from his eyrie. The thopter glided in, its wings cupped. It settled gently onto the lip. Leto stared out through the gathering darkness. Siona emerged and darted in toward him, fearful of the unprotected height. She wore a white robe over a black uniform without insignia. She stole one look backward when she stopped just inside the tower, then she turned her attention to Leto's bulk, waiting on the cart almost at the center of the eyrie. The thopter lifted away and jetted off into the darkness. Leto left the lip extruded, the portal open. "There is a balcony on the other side of the tower," he said. "We will go there."
"Why?"
Siona's voice carried almost pure suspicion.
"I'm told it's a cool place," Leto said, "and there is indeed a faint sensation of cold on my cheeks when I expose them to the breeze there."
Curiosity brought her closer to him. Leto closed the portal behind her.
"The night view from the balcony is magnificent," Leto said.
"Why are we here?"
"Because here we will not be overheard."
Leto turned his cart and moved it silently out to the balcony. The faintest of hidden illumination within the eyrie showed her his movement. He heard her follow. The balcony was a half ring on the southeast arc of the tower, a lacy railing at chest height around the perimeter. Siona moved to the rail and swept her gaze around the open land. Leto sensed the waiting receptivity. Something was to be spoken here, for her ears alone. Whatever it was, she would listen and respond from the well of her own motives. Leto looked across her toward the edge of the sarir, where the man-made boundary wall was a low, flat line, just barely visible in the light of first moon lifting above the horizon. His amplified vision identified the distant movement of a convoy from On. A dull glow of lights from the beast-drawn vehicles pacing along the high road toward Tabor village. He could call up a memory image of the village nestled among the plants which grew in the moist area along the inner base of the wall. His museum Fremen tended date palms, tall grasses, and even truck gardens here. It was not like the old days when any inhabited place, even a tiny basin with a few low plants fed by a single cistern and wind trap, could appear lush by comparison with the open sand. Tabor village was a water-rich paradise when compared with Sietch Tabor. Everyone in today's village knew that just beyond the Sarir's boundary wall, the Idaho River slid southward in a long straight line which would be silver now in the moonlight. Museum Fremen could not climb the wall's sheer inner face, but they knew the water was there. The earth knew, too. If a Tabor inhabitant put an ear against the ground, the earth spoke with the sound of distant rapids. There would be night birds along the bankment now, Leto thought, creatures that would live in sunlight on another world. Dune had worked its evolutionary magic on them, and they still lived at the mercies of the Sarir. Leto had seen the birds draw dumb shadows across the water, and when they dipped to drink, there were ripples which the river took away. Even at this distance, Leto sensed a power in that faraway water, something forceful out of his past which moved away from him like the current slipping southward into the reaches of farm and forest. The water searched through rolling hills, along the margins of an abundant plant life which had replaced all of Dune's desert except for this one last place, this Sarir, this sanctuary of the past. Leto recalled the growling thrust of Ixion machines which had inflicted that watercourse upon the landscape. It seemed such a short time ago, little more than 3,000 years. Siona stirred and looked back at him, but Leto remained silent, his attention fixed beyond her. A pale amber light shone above the horizon, reflection of a town on faraway clouds. From its direction and distance, Leto knew it to be the town of Walport, transplanted far into a warmer clime of the south from its once austere location in the cold, low-slanted light of the north. The glow of the town was like a window into his past. He felt the beam of it striking through to his breast, straight through the thick and scaled membrane which had replaced his human skin. "I am vulnerable," he thought. Yet he knew himself to be the master of this place, and the planet was the master of him. "I am part of it." He devoured the soil directly, rejecting only the water. His human mouth and lungs had been relegated to breathing just enough to sustain a remnant humanity, and talking. Leto spoke to Siona's back. "I like to talk, and I dread the day when I no longer will be able to engage in conversations." With a certain diffidence, she turned and stared at him in the moonlight, quite obvious distaste in her expression. "I agree that I am a monster in many human eyes," he said.
"Why am I here?"
"Directly to the point." She would not deviate. Most of the Atreides had been that way, he thought. It was a characteristic which he hoped to maintain in the breeding of them. It spoke of a strong inner sense of identity. "I need to find out what time has done to you," he said.
"Why do you need that?"
A little fear in her voice there, he thought. "She thinks I will probe after her puny rebellion and the names of her surviving associates." When he remained silent, she said,
"Do you intend to kill me the way you killed my friends?"
"So she has heard about the fighting at the embassy, and she assumes I know all about her past rebellious activities. Moneo has been lecturing her, damn him. Well, I might have done the same in his circumstances."
"Are you really a god?" she demanded. "I don't understand why my father believes that."
"She has some doubts," he thought. "I still have room to maneuver." "Definitions vary," he said. "To Moneo, I am a god, and that is a truth."
"You were human once."
He began to enjoy the leaps of her intellect. She had that sure, hunting curiosity which was the hallmark of the Atreides. "You are curious about me," he said. "It is the same with me. I am curious about you."
"What makes you think I'm curious?"
"You used to watch me very carefully when you were a child. I see that same look in your eyes tonight."
"Yes, I have wondered what it's like to be you."
He studied her for a moment. The moonlight drew shadows under her eyes, concealing them. He could let himself imagine that her eyes were the total blue of his own eyes, the blue of spice addiction. With that imaginative addition, Siona bore a curious resemblance to his long-dead Gani. It was in the outline of her face and the placement of the eyes. He almost told Siona this, then thought better of it.
"Do you eat human food?" Siona asked.
"For a long time after I put on the sand trout skin, I felt stomach hunger," he said. "Occasionally I would attempt food. My stomach mostly rejected it. The cilia of the sand trout spread almost everywhere in my human flesh. Eating became a bothersome thing. These days I only ingest dry substances, which sometimes contain a bit of the spice."
"You eat melange?"
"Sometimes."
"But you no longer have human hungers?"
"I didn't say that." She stared at him, waiting. Leto admired the way she let unspoken questions work for her. She was bright and she had learned much during her short life. "The stomach hunger was a black feeling, a pain I could not relieve," he said. "I would run then, run like an insane creature across the dunes."
"You ran?"
"My legs were longer in proportion to my body in those days. I could move myself about quite easily, but the hungry pain has never left me. I think it's hunger for my lost humanity." He saw the beginnings of reluctant sympathy in her, the questioning.
You still have this pain?
It's only a soft burning now. That's one of the signs of my final metamorphosis. In a few hundred years, I'll be back under the sand.
He saw her clench her fists at her sides.
Why? She demanded. Why did you do this?
This change isn't all bad. Today, for example, has been quite pleasant. I feel quite mellow.
There are changes we cannot see, she said. I know there must be.
She relaxed her hands.
My sight and hearing have become extremely acute, but not my sense of touch. Except for my face, I don't feel things the way I could once. I miss that.
Again he noted the reluctant sympathy, the striving toward an empathic understanding. She wanted to know.
When you live so long, she said, how does the passage of time feel? Does it move more rapidly as the years go by?
That's a strange thing, Siona. Sometimes time rushes by me. Sometimes it creeps.
Gradually, as they spoke, Leto had been dimming the concealed lights of his eyrie, moving his cart closer and closer to Siona. Now he shut off the lights, leaving only the moon. The front of his cart protruded onto the balcony, his face only about 2 meters from Siona.
My father tells me, she said, that the older you get, the slower your time goes. Is that what you told him?
Testing my veracity, he thought. She's not a truth-sayer, then. All things are relative, but compared to the human time sense, this is true.
Why?
It is involved in what I will become. At the end, time will stop for me, and I will be frozen like a pearl caught in ice. My new bodies will scatter, each with a pearl hidden within it.
She turned and looked away from him, peering out at the desert, speaking without looking at him.
When I talk to you like this here in the darkness, I can almost forget what you are.
That's why I chose this hour for our meeting.
But why this place?
Because it is the last place where I can feel at home.
Siona turned against the rail, leaning on it and looking at him.
I want to see you.
He turned on all of the eyrie's lights, including the harsh white globes along the roof of the balcony's outer edge. As the light came on, an Ixion-made transparent mask slid out of wall recesses and sealed off the balcony behind Siona. She felt it move behind her and was startled, but nodded as though she understood. She thought it was a defense against attack. It was not. The wall merely kept out the damp insects of the night. Siona stared at Leto, sweeping her gaze along his body, pausing at the stubs which once had been his legs, bringing her attention then to his arms and hands, then to his face.
Your approved histories tell us that all Atreides are descended from you and your sister Ganima, she said. The oral history disagrees.
The oral history is correct. Your ancestor was Harkaladar. Gani and I were married only in name, a move to consolidate the power.
Like your marriage to this Ixion woman?
That is different.
You will have children?
I have never been capable of having children. I chose the metamorphosis before that was possible.
You were a child, and then you were...
She pointed.
This?
Nothing between.
How does a child know what to choose?
I was one of the oldest children this universe has ever seen. Gani was the other.
That story about your ancestral memories.
A true story. We're all here. Doesn't the oral history agree?
She whirled away and held her back stiffly presented to him. Once more, Leto found himself fascinated by this human gesture, rejection coupled to vulnerability. Presently she turned around and concentrated on his features within the hooded folds.
You have the Atreides look, she said.
I come by it just as honestly as you do.
You're so old. Why aren't you wrinkled?
Nothing about the human part of me ages in a normal way.
Is that why you did this to yourself?
To enjoy long life? No.
I don't see how anyone could make such a choice, she muttered. Then louder,
never to know love. You're playing the fool, he said. You don't mean love. You mean sex.
She shrugged.
You think the most terrible thing I gave up was sex? No. The greatest loss was something far different.
What?
She asked it reluctantly, betraying how deeply he touched her.
I cannot walk among my fellows without their special notice. I am no longer one of you. I am alone. Love? Many people love me, but my shape keeps us apart. We are separated, Siona, by a gulf that no other human dares to bridge.
Not even your Ixion woman?
Yes. She would if she could, but she cannot. She's not an Atreides.
You mean that I could?
She touched her breast with a finger.
If there were enough sand trout around. Unfortunately, all of them enclose my flesh. However, if I were to die,
she shook her head in dumb horror at the thought.
The oral history tells it accurately, he said, and we must never forget that you believe the oral history.
She continued to shake her head from side to side.
There's no secret about it, he said. The first moments of the transformation are the critical ones. Your awareness must drive inward and outward simultaneously, one with infinity. I could provide you with enough melange to accomplish this. Given enough spice, you can live through those first awful moments, and all the other moments.
She shuddered uncontrollably, her gaze fixed on his eyes.
You know I'm telling you the truth, don't you?
She nodded, inhaled a deep, trembling breath, then,
why did you do it?
The alternative was far more horrible.
What alternative?
In time, you may understand it. Moneo did.
Your damned golden path.
Not damned at all. Quite holy.
You think I'm a fool who can't—
I think you're inexperienced, but possessed of great capability whose potential you do not even suspect.
She took three deep breaths and regained some of her composure. Then,
if you can't mate with the Ixion, what—
Child, why do you persist in misunderstanding? It's not sex. Before Hui, I could not pair. I had no other like me. In all of the cosmic void, I was the only one.
She's like you?
Deliberately so. The Ixions made her that way.
Made her—
Don't be a complete fool, he snapped. She is the essential god trap. Even the victim cannot reject her.
Why do you tell me these things?
She whispered.
You stole two copies of my journals, he said. You've read the guild translations, and you already know what could catch me.
You knew?
He saw boldness return to her stance, a sense of her own power.
Of course you knew,
she said, answering her own question.
It was my secret, he said. You cannot imagine how many times I have loved a companion and seen that companion slip away, as your father is slipping away now.
You love him?
And I loved your mother. Sometimes they go quickly, sometimes with agonizing slowness. Each time I am racked. I can play callous, and I can make the necessary decisions, even decisions which kill, but I cannot escape the suffering. For a long, long time, those journals you stole tell it truly, that was the only emotion I knew.
He saw the moistness in her eyes, but the line of her jaw still spoke of angry resolution.
None of this gives you the right to govern, she said.
Leto suppressed a smile. At last they were down to the root of Siona's rebellion.
By what right? Where is justice in my rule? By imposing my rules upon them with a weight of fish speaker arms, am I being fair to the evolutionary thrust of humankind? I know all of the revolutionary cant, the catch prattle, and the resounding phrases.
Nowhere do you see your own rebellious hand in the power I wield, he said.
Her youth still demanded its moment. I never chose you to govern, she said.
But you strengthen me.
How?
By opposing me. I sharpen my claws on the likes of you.
She shot a sudden glance at his hands.
A figure of speech, he said.
So I've offended you at last, she said, hearing only the cutting anger in his words and tone.
You've not offended me. We are related and can speak bluntly to each other within the family. The fact is, I have much more to fear from you than you from me.
This took her aback, but only momentarily. He saw belief stiffen her shoulders, then doubt. Her chin lowered and she peered upward at him. What could the great god Leto fear from me?
Your ignorant violence.
Are you saying that you're physically vulnerable?
I will not warn you again, Siona. There are limits to the word games I will play. You and the Ixians both know that it's the ones I love who are physically vulnerable. Soon most of the Empire will know it. This is the kind of information which travels fast.
And they'll all ask what right you have to rule.
There was glee in her voice. It aroused an abrupt anger in Leto. He found it difficult to suppress. This was a side of human emotions he detested. Gloating. It was some time before he dared answer. Then he chose to slash through her defenses at the vulnerability he already had seen. I rule by the right of loneliness, Siona. My loneliness is part freedom and part slavery. It says I cannot be bought by any human group. My slavery to you says that I will serve all of you to the best of my lordly abilities.
But the Ixians have caught you, she said.
No, they have given me a gift which strengthens me.
It weakens you.
That, too, he admitted. But very powerful forces still obey me.
Oh, yes, she nodded. I understand that.
You don't understand it.
Then I'm sure you'll explain it to me, she taunted.
He spoke so softly that she had to lean toward him to hear. There are no others of any kind anywhere who can call upon me for anything, not for sharing, not for compromise, not even for the slightest beginning of another government. I am the only one.
Not even this Ixian woman can...
She is so much like me that she would not weaken me in that way.
But when the Ixian embassy was attacked,
I can still be irritated by stupidity, he said.
She scowled at him. Leto thought it a pretty gesture in that light, quite unconscious. He knew he had made her think. He was sure she had never before considered that any rights might adhere to uniqueness. He addressed her silent scowl.
There has never before been a government exactly like mine, not in all of our history. I am responsible only to myself, exacting payment in full for what I have sacrificed.
Sacrificed, she sneered, but he heard the doubts. Every despot says something like that. You're responsible only to yourself,
which makes every living thing my responsibility. I watch over you through these times.
Through what times?
The times that might have been and then no more.
He saw the indecision in her. She did not trust her instincts, her untrained abilities at prediction. She might leap occasionally, as she had done when she took his journals, but the motivation for the leap was lost in the revelation which followed. My father says you can be very tricky with words, she said.
And he ought to know. But there is knowledge you can only gain by participating in it. There's no way to learn it by standing off and looking and talking.
That's the kind of thing he means, she said.
You're quite right, he agreed. It's not logical. But it is a light, an eye which can see but does not see itself.
I'm tired of talking, she said.
As am I. And he thought, I have seen enough, done enough. She is wide open to her doubts. How vulnerable they are in their ignorance.
You haven't convinced me of anything, she said.
That was not the purpose of this meeting.
What was the purpose?
To see if you are ready to be tested.
Test?
She dipped her head a bit to the right and stared at him.
Don't play the innocent with me, he said. Moneo has told you, and I tell you that you are ready. She tried to swallow. Then,
what are—
I have sent for Moneo to return you to the Citadel, he said. When we meet again, we will really learn what you are made of.
You know the myth of the Great Spice Hoard? Yes, I know about that story too. A majordomo brought it to me one day to amuse me. The story says there is a hoard of melange, a gigantic hoard, big as a great mountain. The hoard is concealed in the depths of a distant planet. It is not Arrakis, that planet. It is not Dune. The spice was hidden there long ago, even before the First Empire and the Spacing Guild. The story says Paul Muad'Dib went there and lives yet beside the hoard, kept alive by it, waiting. The majordomo did not understand why the story disturbed me. The Stolen Journals.
Idaho trembled with anger as he strode along the gray plastone halls toward his quarters in the Citadel. At each guard post he passed, the woman there snapped to attention. He did not respond. Idaho knew he was causing disturbance among them. Nobody could mistake the commander's mood, but he did not abate his purposeful stride. The heavy thumping of his boots echoed along the walls. He could still taste the noon meal, oddly familiar Atreides chopstick fare of mixed grains, herb seasoned, and baked around a pungent morsel of pseudo-meat, all of it washed down with a drink of clear sidrit juice. Moneo had found him at table in the guard mess, alone in a corner with a regional operations schedule propped up beside his plate. Without invitation, Moneo had seated himself opposite Idaho and had pushed aside the operations schedule.
"I bring a message from the God Emperor," Moneo said.
The tightly controlled tone warned Idaho that this was no casual encounter. Others sensed it. Listening silence settled over the women at nearby tables, spreading out through the room. Idaho put down his chopsticks.
Yes?
These were the words of the God Emperor, Moneo said. It is my bad luck that Duncan Idaho should become enamored of Hui Nori. This mischance must not continue.
Anger thinned Idaho's lips, but he remained silent.
Such foolishness endangers us all, Moneo said. Nori is the God Emperor's intended.
Idaho tried to control his anger, but the words were a betrayal.
He can't marry her.
Why not?
What game is he playing, Moneo?
I am a messenger with a single message, no more,
Moneo said. Idaho's voice was low and threatening.
But he confides in you.
The God Emperor sympathizes with you,
Moneo lied.
Sympathizes?
Idaho shouted the word, creating a new depth to the room's silence.
Nori is a woman of obvious attractions, Moneo said, but she is not for you.
The God Emperor has spoken, Idaho sneered, and there is no appeal.
I see that you understand the message, Moneo said.
Idaho started to push himself away from the table.
Where are you going?
Moneo demanded.
I'm going to have this out with him right now.
That is certain suicide, Moneo said.
Idaho glared at him, aware suddenly of the listening intensity in the women at the tables around him. An expression which Muad'Dib would have recognized immediately came over Idaho's face. Playing to the devil's gallery, Muad'Dib had called it.
Do you know what the original Atreides dukes always said? Idaho asked.
There was a mocking tone in his voice.
Is it pertinent?
They said your liberties all vanish when you look up to any absolute ruler.
Rigid with fear, Moneo leaned toward Idaho. Moneo's lips barely moved. His voice was little more than a whisper.
Don't say such things.
Because one of these women will report it?
Moneo shook his head in disbelief.
You are more reckless than any of the others.
Really?
Please, it is perilous in the extreme to take this attitude.
Idaho heard the nervous stirring that swept through the room.
He can only kill us, Idaho said.
Moneo spoke in a tight whisper.
You fool. The worm can dominate him at the slightest provocation.
The worm, you say? Idaho's voice was unnecessarily loud.
You must trust him, Moneo said.
Idaho glanced left and right.
Yes, I think they heard that.
He has billions upon billions of people united in that one body,
Moneo said.
So I've been told.
He is God, and we are mortal,
Moneo said.
How is it a god can do evil things?
Idaho asked. Moneo thrust his chair backward and leaped to his feet.
I wash my hands of you.
Whirling away, he dashed from the room. Idaho looked out into the room, finding himself the center of attention for all of the guards' faces.
Moneo doesn't judge, but I do,
Idaho said. It surprised him then to glimpse a few wry smiles among the women. They all returned to their eating. As he strode down the hall of the Citadel, Idaho replayed the conversation, seeking out the oddities in Moneo's behavior. The terror could be recognized and even understood, but it had seemed far more than fear of death. Far, far more. The worm can dominate him. Idaho felt that this had slipped out of Moneo, an inadvertent betrayal. What could it mean? More reckless than any of the others. It galled Idaho that he should have to bear comparisons to himself as an unknown. How careful had the others been? Idaho came to his own door, put a hand on the palm lock, and hesitated. He felt like a hunted animal retreating to his den. The guards in the mess surely would have reported that conversation to Leto by now. What would the god emperor do? Idaho's hand moved across the lock. The door swung inward. He entered the anteroom of his apartment and sealed the door, looking at it.
Will he send his fish speakers for me?
Idaho glanced around the entry area. It was a conventional space, racks for clothing and shoes, a full-length mirror, a weapons cupboard. He looked at the closed door of the cupboard. Not one of the weapons behind that door offered any real threat to the God Emperor. There wasn't even a laser gun, although even laser guns were ineffectual against the worm, according to all the accounts.
He knows I will defy him.
Idaho sighed and looked toward the arched portal which led into the sitting area. Moneo had replaced the soft furniture with heavier, stiffer pieces, some of them recognizably Fremen, culled from the coffers of the Museum Fremen.
Museum Fremen.
Idaho spat and strode through the portal. Two steps into the room he stopped, shocked. The soft light from the north windows revealed Hui Nori seated on the low sling divan. She wore a shimmering blue gown which draped itself revealingly around her figure. Hui looked up at his entrance.
Thank the gods you've not been harmed, she said.
Idaho glanced back at his entry, at the palm-locked door. He returned a speculative look at Hui. No one but a few selected guards should be able to open that door. She smiled at his confusion.
We Ixians manufactured those locks, she said.
He found himself filled with fear for her.
What are you doing here?
We must talk.
About what?
Duncan.
She shook her head.
About us.
They warned you, he said.
I've been told to reject you.
Moneo sent you.
Two guardswomen who overheard you in the mess, they brought me. They think you are in terrible danger.
Is that why you're here?
She stood, one graceful motion which reminded him of the way Leto's grandmother Jessica had moved, the same fluid control of muscles, every movement beautiful. Realization came as a shock.
You're Bene Gesserit.
No. They were among my teachers, but I am not Bene Gesserit.
Suspicions clouded his mind. What allegiances were really at work in Leto's empire? What does Agola know about such things?
The changes since last I lived.
I suppose you're still just a simple Ixion, he said.
Please don't sneer at me, Duncan.
What are you?
I am the intended bride of the God Emperor.
And you'll serve him faithfully?
I will.
Then there's nothing for us to talk about.
Except this thing between us.
He cleared his throat.
What thing?
This attraction.
She raised a hand as he started to speak.
I want to hurl myself into your arms, to find the love and shelter I know is there. You want it too.
He held himself rigid.
The God Emperor forbids.
But I am here. She took two steps toward him, the gown rippling across her body.
Hui.
He tried to swallow in a dry throat.
It's best you leave.
Prudent, but not best, she said.
If he finds that you've been here.
It is not my way to leave you like this. Again she stopped his response with a lifted hand. I was bred and trained for just one purpose. Her words filled him with icy caution.
What purpose?
To woo the God Emperor. Oh, he knows this. He would not change a thing about me.
Nor would I.
She moved a step closer. He smelled the milky warmth of her breath. They made me too well, she said. I was designed to please an Atreides. Leto says his Duncan is more an Atreides than many born to the name.
Leto?
How else should I address the one I'll wed? Even as she spoke, Hui leaned toward Idaho. As though a magnet had found its point of critical attraction, they moved together. Hui pressed her cheek against his tunic, her arms around him feeling the hard muscles. Idaho rested his chin in her hair, the musk filling his senses.
This is insane, he whispered.
Yes. He lifted her chin and kissed her. She pressed herself against him. Neither of them doubted where this must lead. She did not resist when he lifted her off her feet and carried her into the bedroom. Only once did Idaho speak.
You're not a virgin.
Nor are you, love.
Love,
he whispered.
Love,
he whispered.
Love, love, love.
Yes, yes. In the post-coital peace, Hui put both hands behind her head and stretched, twisting on the rumpled bed. Idaho sat with his back to her, looking out the window.
Who were your other lovers?
He asked. She lifted herself on one elbow. I've had no other lovers. But, he turned and looked down at her. In my teens, she said, there was a young man who needed me very much. She smiled. Afterward, I was very ashamed. How trusting I was. I thought I had failed the people who depended on me. But they found out and they were elated. You know, I think I was being tested. Idaho scowled.
Is that how it was with me? I needed you?
No, Duncan. Her features were grave. We gave joy to each other because that's how it is with love.
Love,
he said, and it was a bitter sound. She said, My uncle Malky used to say that love was a bad bargain, because you get no guarantees.
Your uncle Malky was a wise man.
He was stupid. Love needs no guarantees. A smile twitched at the corners of Idaho's mouth. She grinned up at him. You know it's love, when you want to give joy and damn the consequences. He nodded.
I think only of the danger to you.
We are what we are, she said.
What will we do?
We'll cherish this for as long as we live.
You sound so final.
I am.
But we'll see each other every...
Never again, like this.
We!
He hurled himself across the bed and buried his face in her breast. She stroked his hair. His voice muffled against her. He said...
What if I've impreg...
Shh! If there's to be a child, there will be a child. Idaho lifted his head and looked at her.
But he'll know for sure.
He'll know anyway.
You think he really knows everything?
Not everything. But he'll know this.
How?
I will tell him. Idaho pushed himself away from her and sat up on the bed. Anger warred with confusion in his expression. I must, she said.
If he turns against you, Hui, there are stories. You could be in terrible danger.
No, I have needs too. He knows this. He will not harm either of us.
But
he will not destroy me. He will know that if he harms you, that would destroy me.
How can you marry him?
Dear Duncan, have you not seen that he needs me more than you do?
But he cannot. I mean, you can't possibly.
The joy that you and I have in each other, I'll not have that with Leto. It's impossible for him. He has confessed this to me.
Then why can't... If he loves you...
He has larger plans and larger needs.
She reached out and took Idaho's right hand in both of hers.
I've known that since I first began to study about him. Needs larger than either of us have.
What plans? What needs?
Ask him.
Do you know?
Yes.
You mean you believe those stories about...
There is honesty and goodness in him. I know it by my own responses to him. What my Ixion masters made in me was, I think, a reagent which reveals more than they wanted me to know.
Then you believe him,
Idaho accused. He tried to pull his hand away from her.
If you go to him, Duncan, and...
He'll never see me again.
He will.
She pulled his hand to her mouth and kissed his fingers.
I'm a hostage,
he said.
You've made me fearful. The two of you together.
I never thought it would be easy to serve God, she said. I just didn't think it would be this hard.
Memory has a curious meaning to me, a meaning I have hoped others might share. It continually astonished me how people hide from their ancestral memories, shielding themselves behind a thick barrier of mythos. Oh, I do not expect them to seek the terrible immediacy of every living moment which I must experience. I can understand that they might not want to be submerged in a mush of petty ancestral details. You have reason to fear that your living moments might be taken over by others. Yet the meaning is there within those memories. We carry all of our ancestry forward like a living wave, all of the hopes and joys and griefs, the agonies and the exaltations of our past. Nothing within those memories remains completely without meaning or influence, not as long as there is a humankind somewhere. We have that bright infinity all around us, that golden path of forever to which we can continually pledge our puny but inspired allegiance. The Stolen Journals.
I have summoned you, Moneo, because of what my guards tell me, Leto said.
They stood in the darkness of the crypt, where, Moneo reminded himself, some of the God Emperor's most painful discussions originated. Moneo, too, had heard reports. He had been expecting the summons all afternoon, and when it came shortly after the evening meal, a moment of terror had engulfed him.
Is it about the Duncan, Lord?
Of course it's about the Duncan.
I'm told, Lord, his behavior...
Terminal behavior, Moneo?
Moneo bowed his head.
If you say it, Lord.
How long until the Tleilaxu could supply us with another one?
They say they have had problems, Lord. It might be as much as 2 years.
Do you know what my guards tell me, Moneo?
Moneo held his breath. If the God Emperor had learned about this latest... No, even the fish speakers were terrified by the affront. Had it been anyone but a Duncan, the women would have taken it upon themselves to eliminate him.
Well, Moneo?
I am told, Lord, that he called out a levy of guards and questioned them about their origins. On what worlds were they born? What of their parentage, their childhood?
And the answers did not please him.
He frightened them, Lord. He kept insisting.
As though repetition could elicit the truth, yes.
Moneo allowed himself to hope that this might be the whole of his lord's concern.
Why do the Duncans always do this, Lord?
It was their early training, the Atreides' training.
But how did that differ from...
The Atreides lived in the service of the people they governed. The measure of their government was found in the lives of the governed. Thus the Duncans always want to know how the people live.
He has spent a night in one village, Lord. He has been to some of the towns. He has seen...
It's all in how you interpret the results, Moneo. Evidence is nothing without judgments.
I have observed that he judges, Lord.
We all do. But the Duncans tend to believe that this universe is hostage to my will, and they know that you cannot do wrong in the name of right.
Is that what he says, you?
It is what I say, what all of the Atreides in me say.
This universe will not permit it. The things you attempt will not endure if you—
But, Lord, you do no wrong.
Poor Moneo, you cannot see that I have created a vehicle of injustice. Moneo could not speak. He realized that he had been diverted by a seeming return to mildness in the God Emperor. But now Moneo sensed changes moving in that great body, and at this proximity— Moneo glanced around the crypt's central chamber, reminding himself of the many deaths which had occurred here and which were enshrined here.
Is it my time?
Leto spoke in a musing tone. You cannot succeed by taking hostages. That is a form of enslavement. One kind of human cannot own another kind of human. This universe will not permit it. The words lay there, simmering in Moneo's awareness, a terrifying contrast to the rumblings of transformation which he sensed in his lord.
The worm comes.
Again Moneo glanced around the crypt chamber. This place was far worse than the eerie. Sanctuary was too remote. Well, Moneo, do you have any response? Leto asked. Moneo ventured a whisper.
The Lord's words enlighten me.
Enlighten? You are not enlightened, Moneo spoke out of desperation.
But I serve my Lord.
You claim service to God?
Yes, Lord.
Who created your religion, Moneo?
You did, Lord.
That's a sensible answer.
Thank you, Lord.
Don't thank me. Tell me what religious institutions perpetuate. Moneo backed away 4 steps. Stand where you are, Leto ordered. Trembling all through his body, Moneo shook his head dumbly. At last, he had encountered the question without answer. Failure to answer would precipitate his death. He waited for it, head bowed.
Then I will tell you, poor servant.